Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre. The dog days of August are here. The sports world is starting to turn around. Preseason football has actually begun. There's a Hall of Fame game taking place at the moment. But you're here with us, so we appreciate that. You are indeed listening to Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on Thursday night, August the 3rd, 2023. I'm Dre. He's Jay. It is our Hall of Infamy induction evening. But football is being played, but this is not the football Hall of Infamy show. We're slightly behind on our scheduling. Tonight is the baseball Hall of Infamy induction show. Football will be done by Jay at a later date. But me, I have been busy with some other things and finally made the time to make it for the baseball Hall of Infamy class of 2023. So we're a little late. They fooled me a little bit. They did the baseball, the real Hall of Fame induction ceremony earlier than they normally do. They did that like last weekend or something like that. They did it in July.
Yeah,
it's
been a week or two already, it feels like. And it was such a, I mean, the class was pretty sad. I mean,
it really was. I mean, no offense to Scott Rolen and Fred McGriff, but come on.
Right. No, it was not the Hall of Fame that got results.
It was not. Well, it may have gotten some results, but it wasn't very exciting. Wasn't the results anyone was expecting or looking for. It's not what you think of when you think of the Hall of Fame. It's like,
no,
that's the hall of.
I guess I would say Fred McGriff. Okay, I mean. He was an accumulator. That's great. Scott Rolen? No.
Great defender.
Never once did I watch Scott Rolen and think, man, I'm watching a Hall of Famer.
Right. C'est la vie. Such is life. Such is the real Hall of Fame. And we malign it and talk about it all the time. But, hey, that's part of the inspiration of why we have our Hall of Infamy.
Without that, there wouldn't be this.
Exactly. We want to put forth the people that really need to be recognized, that really deserve to. There's no 75%. There's no, 10 years, 15 years of, they weren't quite good enough. But, yeah, now we'll go ahead and let them in. It's true that some, you know, people have to wait to get in, but that's just because we limit our selections to 5 per year. But it's not because they don't deserve it. Everybody will get their shine in due time. But this year's class of 2023 for the Baseball Hall of Infamy is ready and set to be inducted. Think it'll be entertaining, Jay. There's some personal connection in there for us. There's some AV elements as we are wont to do. So I think I got a pretty good class this year. Unless you have anything else, I think I'm ready to get started.
No, I've got my drink here. I'm taking the back seat tonight. You're doing the driving, so I just get to sit in the back and snipe and comment and listen to what you're saying and laugh and cry and maybe both at the same time. And you know, people haven't listened to our show. This is a football themed show, but you know, before there was football for us, long before there was football for us, there was always baseball, Ray. There's always baseball.
It would always be there for you. That's right. It's our sort of first love. I mean, football was there as we were children as well, but baseball was first for sure. We certainly were getting drunk on 84 Cubs and 83 White Sox long before the before the 86 Bears came along. So,
right.
So we definitely have our love for baseball. We definitely go back with some history as far as these inductions go. I do want to let everybody know that the my usual way of doing the inductions is to type it all up on the blog and have it scheduled for its release as soon as the show goes live. So that is the case. It is live as of 9 Central PM this evening when we went on the air live in much less detail, .blogspot.com. The first entry right now will be the Thursday, August 3rd blog posting, which has the 2023 MLB Hall of Infamy inductions. And I'm going to, as I always do, read directly from those posts, interjecting the audiovisual prompts as needed. And with that, I will get started. A couple of interactive pieces, like I said, and a historically, for us at least, infamous game that will in the proceedings. So let's get started. We mentioned Fred McGriff and then his induction ceremony that may or may not have gotten results. And, of course, that joke comes from the very infamous videos that he was a spokesperson for. So let's get right started. Right off the bat, Fred McGriff, Hall of Famer. You can say yay or nay to that, but certainly infamous, those videotapes and those commercials. So welcome the very first member this year of the Hall of Infamy class of 2023, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Tommy Mansky.
God damn it. You finally sniped me.
Oh, I got you. All right.
Oh, I'm going to have to get my phone and delete that one.
Oh, I had to.
It's perfect.
Crime Dog goes
Fred
in.
I get it. I get it.
Had to do it.
I'm clapping for you.
It was about time. Usually you get me right off the bat, so this time I finally got you. Tommy Mansky, the baseball skills guru, is infamous for an endearing, kitschy 1980s commercial featuring what wound up being a future Hall of Famer in Fred McGriff. If you have any idea about ESPN in the 90s and the 2000s, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't, here's the commercial now, or one of many commercials.
Discover the defensive training secrets of America's finest baseball school in an exciting videotape. Baseball World's Defensive Drills video features professional scout and instructor Tommy Mansky and the same revolutionary new training techniques that have produced Baseball World's back-to-back-to-back AAU National Championship teams. The Defensive Drills video vastly improves players' arm strength, running speed, quickness, agility, and infield and outfield defensive skills. Even coaches practice organization. Lou Pavlovich, Jr., editor of Collegiate Baseball Magazine, calls it a masterpiece, the best defensive drill video ever produced. Many professional players are excited about this videotape. Just ask Atlanta Braves superstar Fred McGriff.
This is an instructional video that gets results.
Baseball World's Defensive Drills video makes a great gift and benefits players of all ages and ability levels. To order your copy for only $29.95, have your credit card ready and call toll-free. 1-800-253-8005. That's 1-800-253-8005.
It really worked for me.
And those of you who watched the commercial over and over again, you had to do
the finger point.
Finger point. As soon as you
heard, yeah, I did it. This is the instructional video that gets results. You got to do the point.
You got to do the finger point. And you got to have the puffy hat. Tommy Mansky hit the mother load for youth baseball coaches. He had success winning youth tournaments, as you heard, as touted in his ubiquitous commercials. And he parlayed that into instructional videos where he taught defensive drills and other baseball skills. A couple of deals pushed these videos into infamy. The deal that Mansky struck to have the commercials for these videos in constant rotation on ESPN in the 1990s and 2000s, which reportedly kicked back one-third of the sales of the tapes to ESPN, which explains why they were on all the time, and the deal to have Poofy Hat Crime Dog McGriff point at the camera and endorse the videos. This may have, no kidding, contributed to McGriff keeping his name top of mind for Hall of Fame voters, who eventually gave him the call this year. The irony? McGriff admitted he never watched the instructional video.
Well, of course not. As long as the check, that's all that counts.
long as the check clears. That's my motto for this upcoming fall as well. But as we know, any publicity is good publicity, and McGriffin and Mansky both benefited from the endless airplay of those commercials. It's estimated that 50,000 spots for his videos aired on ESPN in a 10-year span. That will get you recognized as the worldwide leader in baseball instruction, whether you're any good at it or not. Our first entry in the 2023 Hall of Infamy, Tom and Mansky.
Yeah, I already clapped for you, but that's you beat me to it. So topical, so perfect for this season with Fred McGriff going in. And yes, nothing is complete without that finger point.
I mean, you talk about he got his name out there. It's like he is the baseball guru guy. Like him and Tom House are like the guys
yeah.
if you want to have baseball instruction. That's the names that you think of. So that's awesome. I don't know how good he is at coaching at all, but he did it. He got that video in rotation just in perpetuity. So he made himself infamous. So good for him. Good business deal. You know,
yeah, you'll have that nice exhibit with that playing on an endless loop.
Oh my gosh. That yeah, so many spots because it started out with the back-to-back national champions. Then he won another one. So now it became the back-to-back-to-back AAU national. Yeah.
Yeah, anybody who, like us, if you're watching ESPN in the 90s, you are just getting beaten over the head by that commercial. And, people can't even separate. You almost can't talk about Fred McGriff anymore without talking about those Tom and Mansky videos.
Right. It really did, I think, keep him up there in people's minds. When you can't help but think about those commercials when you think about McGriff, and you can't help but think about McGriff when you think about those commercials. Yeah, I really do think that played a part. You know, people's minds are fickle. Their memories are pliable. And whatever you do to keep yourself top of mind, obviously I don't think McGriff was thinking that at the time. That's what wound up happening. I really think that's played a big part in him getting elected eventually to the Hall of Fame. Without that, he's just, without that, he's Carlos Delgado. He's just a guy that amassed a lot of numbers, right?
But he did have a cool nickname.
He was the crime dog. That's right. Google the crime dog McGruff videos, kids, if you don't know what we're talking about with that.
Yeah, even that reference is
dated. Yes, very much. He's dated. The nickname's dated. Everything about it is. His commercials are dated. You know, we should all be
people
so lucky
think like
to,
well,
to
crime
be
dog is like this is almost this is like this is nope, this has nothing to do with rap.
And nothing to do with his personality. He's like the nicest guy. He's
right.
The complete opposite of a crime dog.
It was McGruff.
That's right. McGruff the crime dog. Nice throwback to start there. We'll keep the throwbacks going I got to go to the dark side a little bit. This will not be very...
I'll switch while I do football. Don't worry about it.
So we'll go back, but it won't be smiles and laughs. It will be a very sad story. We get a lot of things in the sports media these days about giving second chances. Do you get a slap on the wrist? Do you really get the hammer laid down when you do something wrong? Let's talk about the prime candidate for second chances, the guy that got so many chances it became a running joke. The second inductee into the 2023 Baseball Hall of Infamy, the late, great Steve Howe.
That had to be like eight chances.
Oh, my God. Very, very close to it. Steve Howe, a relief pitcher, mostly with the Yankees, is infamous for losing his way over and over and over and over again. How is the poster child for athletes getting second chances because he got seven? It wasn't eight. It was seven. Count them. Seven chances to redeem himself in the eyes of Major League Baseball. He kept choosing to find comfort in his substances, forcing the league to ban him for good. How was a successful pitcher, saving 17 games in his Dodgers NL Rookie of the Year campaign in 1980 and helping them beat, ironically, the Yankees in the 81 World Series. By 83, he was checking himself into rehab for alcohol and cocaine, and was suspended for the entire season in 1984. Howe kept making comebacks and kept getting suspended again, and by the time he got busted for the seventh time in 1992, MLB had enough and banned him for life. An arbiter overturned the ban, however, and Howe was back pitching again for the New York Yankees from 1994 through 96. The story of someone so determined to turn back to drugs after so many opportunities was destined to end badly. And thus, Hal flipped his truck in 2006 and died at age 48 with meth in his system, naturally. Hal became the face of athlete privilege because in no other occupation could someone get caught abusing drugs and alcohol on 7 different occasions.
I was off by one.
Oh, you're way off. You missed it by one. And still be considered employable. It's not a stretch to link the harsher punishment and lesser chances for guys today to the multiple wasted chances on infamous basket cases like Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden and Steve Howe, the second inductee into this year's Hall of Infamy.
You know, it's sad because it's a substance abuse story, right? And it's a guy who couldn't get his life on track, but it became comical. And that's kind of the sad part, was that sort of two-pronged issue that you had where, you know, the MLB just couldn't – I just can't quit you. They just kept bringing him back. I mean, he's like the Josh Gordon of MLB.
Really?
I mean, just – and you bring him back. Oh, he had another suspension for the same thing. And that would not happen these days. Most of these leagues – this tolerance level would not be there. And, you know, and after I don't know how many, but it would not get to 7 for most players.
No.
And it's sad because clearly he's a guy, he's struggling with addiction. And because he wasn't bad, right? I mean, he kept getting chances because he could produce when he wasn't, you know, he coked out or drunk or whatever, you know, any of the number of methed out, any of these things that he's got going on. He was a good player. So it's sad. It's a cautionary tale. But then there's also that sort of, you know, where we have this dark sense of humor about us on this show sometimes, especially when it comes to Hall of Infamy.
Sometimes.
It becomes, well, you know, just trying to underplay it a little bit. It becomes almost a parody of itself. And it did. You know, and I even remember us way back when, just when we were doing, just talking about sports, it would be a joke. It was almost like a running gag in real time, where he was getting another chance. Oh, he got another chance. Oh, yeah, not good. Not a good look for the league. Not a good look for the guy. Never clearly got the help. With all the resources of these big sports leagues now, I don't think somebody like him would just slip through the cracks. He probably would have, you know, with the weight of the league and things like that, I'm sure they would have probably had a little bit more for intervention and getting the guy some help, and definitely would not have had 7 chances to, you know, blow in the league.
So to speak.
Right.
With all the blow out there for him, yeah. I mean, he made himself a joke. The league made it a joke.
Hey!
And he made himself a joke by continuing to, oops, I slipped in some coke again. How did I keep doing that?
That was his coke at the White House. They just found it too late.
It may well have been. He had so much of it. It became a joke because it was a joke. That's an absolute joke. Can you imagine anybody? Oops, I slipped again. That's what, 5 now? All right, well, this time I'm going to clean it up and really get better.
Doing like the Austin Powers video. Oh, I fell over. Oh, I fell over again.
And you brought up the other side of the athlete privilege is the fact that he was good. That's why they kept bringing him back, because he actually knew how to pitch and was an effective closer for the Yankees even after 7 suspensions.
But if he's one of these – like scrubby third-rate players on the Colts who gambled, gone forever.
Exactly. They're not doing that to Jonathan Taylor. Believe me.
No. Yeah, Jonathan Taylor played some DraftKings. I don't think he's getting a lifetime ban.
We're not finding out about it if it's Jonathan Taylor or any of these other
guys. That's also true.
You cannot possibly convince me that it's only the scrubs that get caught gambling. They're the only ones that have a gambling problem. The top stars don't have a problem because they don't have.
Yeah, with all and with these gambling suspensions now, you know, like with Calvin Ridley and all these guys coming back, you know who's the most hosed out of all this is still Pete Rose to this day.
He was a forerunner, right? He was a visionary.
He did it before it was cool.
That's right. He he had a problem before it was cool to have a problem. Now that guy, really, if anyone should be getting paid off of all these casinos, it's him. Like he introduced all these guys in the front door back when they were telling all these casinos and gambling. It wasn't gambling sites back then, but it was certainly all the casinos and affiliates of the casinos that wanted to have a relationship with these sports. And Pete Rose was trying to hold the door open and let come on in. It's good. It's all good, guys. And they were shoving everybody out the door at that point, talking about how terrible it was. And it's a black eye on the sport and it makes us look bad. And then they started cutting all these deals where they get a piece of the pie. And now it's okay. Hey, that's, come on in. We're open the door and invite everybody in. And it's all good.
Now we have sports teams in Vegas.
Uh-huh. No problems at all. Nothing to see here, folks. But, yeah, that's not going to stand. The gambling, no one's going to get seven chances at gambling and keep getting brought back. No one's going to get seven chances at substances and keep getting brought back. Definitely a different day and age in the 80s when this was happening. But, yeah, Steve out. Yeah, that's been a running joke for a long time. And, you know, yeah, it is sad, but also, come on, what the hell? Six, seven, five wasn't enough. Six, seven, really?
He's the LeBron James of drug. Not one, not two,
not three, not five.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Speaking of substances, We have a guest in our booth, and we're going to turn to him right now, even though we probably shouldn't give him a live microphone.
A celebrity in the booth, Mudcat.
We have a sighting. We have a Sut sighting.
Sut sighting. Our friend and colleague Rick Sutcliffe dropping by to say hello. There's Vinny Castilla leading things off in the last of the eighth. Oh, he ran away now. You can go hang out with Brooks and Dunn. The Red Baron.
Is he on?
There he is. Sut. It's good to have you back, son.
Oh, my goodness, man. How good is this?
What's up, Redhead? You taking some time away from your busy ESPN world to hang out down here with us little dogs?
It's not that busy, man. It's not that busy.
Sud, who you been playing golf with?
He's here. He's in the house tonight. Bill Murray.
Josh Barfield. It's a fly ball out there. Short center field. Oh. Ouch, man.
The shoulder, too. Look how he rolls on the shoulder.
You guys have me cracking up all the time.
So we miss you around here, man.
Let me tell you something. I'm not far away. I'm here all the time.
What's the best city in the National League to play golf in? Seriously.
The best city in the world, Mud. Where is it?
San Diego.
Right here, man. You can't beat it.
To the eighth.
Sut, you had some unbelievable news in spring training, and I wanted to pass it along because you've got a wonderful wife, a beautiful daughter. She got accepted to Harvard Law School.
About Harvard Medical School, man.
Medical school.
Boy, great play by Bill Hall in the shortstop. Well, he's all over the field all of a sudden, and there are two gone now with bar to board on the fielder's choice.
So you're going
to
be a doctor in the family? Harvard Medical School. Congratulations.
Come on, man.
That's awesome.
Why does that surprise you?
You know, it doesn't, but
it doesn't surprise
us. Look at me.
It doesn't surprise us because your daughter is
all the conversations
a smart lady.
We've had.
But the fact that she's your daughter still surprises us.
That's all good, man. She's on her way to Africa tomorrow. How about that? Over there on one of those missions, man. George Clooney. You been reading about all that? You been seeing that?
George Clooney.
Yeah.
Here's Ben Johnson.
He's up there with he's up there with the Congress. He's trying to get everybody to go there and solve that thing.
That misses low, a ball and a strike.
Pretty good pitch there.
I'm getting yelled at from Bill Murray in the back. I need to go. I'd much rather hang with you guys than him.
Thanks for joining us, Sut.
He can wait. Mud, you're the best, man. Anybody on earth that doesn't like Mark Grant, I mean, they got problems. Maddie. What are you still doing here in San Diego?
Red Baron, you were
Maddie.
An answer to a trivia question earlier.
No, Maddie.
We were at Dodger
Everybody
Stadium.
Everybody on earth has been trying to steal you.
We were at Dodger Stadium.
The Dodgers, the Cubs, ESPN.
2 weeks ago.
What are you still doing here?
Wow.
George Clooney. That's a classic.
That man, that just sitting there listening to the whole breadth of that again, it was like, whoo.
I mean, that is Namath drunk right there. That's bad. I haven't heard that in a long time. And all, you know, I still remembered all the, you know, the Bill Murray, the George Clooney, you know, yeah. He's trying to get Matt Vasgersian fired.
Right. That's the dismount. That's the beautiful.
What are you doing here? This place sucks, man. Everybody wants you. What are you still doing here? Calling the Padres.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, the longest, I think, inductee into the Lee Elio Wing of Quotes would be good old drunk Rick Sutcliffe.
Yeah, there's quotes within that quote, too.
Right. Infamous for crowning Sut as an honorary king of non sequitur, because there is no better example of someone needing to have his live mic cut off than Rick Sutcliffe deciding to transition from talking about his daughter to some celebrity gossip.
George Clooney. You've been reading about all that? You've been seeing that?
George Clooney.
Sutcliffe, the...
Best reaction, man. It's not just him doing it. It's the reaction. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
Right. I think that's the moment where Vasgersian realized, oh shit, this dude.
No, get this out of here. This first of all, I grew up watching the Cubs. This is what Steve Stone dealt with all day.
Put that cigar off, Steve. Oh my gosh. Sutcliffe, the former Rookie of the Year and Cy Young winner, was winding down what sounded like a really fun day golfing with Bill Murray.
With Bill Murray. Bill Murray is in the house.
He's in the house tonight. On May 10th, 2006, when some jackass decided to mic him up during the Brewers-Padres game in San Diego, and you just heard the infamous three-minute result. Sutcliffe had a good post-playing days broadcasting career going for himself before burning it all down on this evening. Similar to Fred McGriff getting possible positive momentum towards the real Hall of Fame thanks to his videos, I can't help but wonder if Sutcliffe has suffered negative momentum because of this video. I think he's got more of a Hall of Fame case than Scott Rolen, and maybe as much as McGriff.
I mean, first of all, if the Red Baron, if he ever goes into the Hall of Fame, I think George Clooney has to put him in.
George Clooney? Really? Why? George Clooney.
George Clooney. You've been reading about all that? You've been seeing that?
George Clooney.
I'm glad that you have just that cut, because that's what we really need from that whole thing.
That's the one we've been quoting over the years. Like, we just,
yeah, that's the money shot right there.
When we completely go off the road and just completely take the wrong answer, we just kind of look up at it. George Clooney. Like, how did we get there? Wait a minute. So, yeah, that's definitely the big one there. Yeah, it's not conceivable that Sutcliffe's ever getting that call for, you know, to be a real Hofer, because before he dies, it's not going to happen, because so many people think of this incident now when they think of Sutcliffe at all, you know, and that's really too bad, because that 15-1 record in 1984 for the Cubs is one of the most dominant stretches of pitching I've ever seen still to this day. And he deserves to be remembered for much more than Maddie and George Clooney. But he's one of many to learn that one too many can destroy anything that came before that. So sort of sad, but definitely infamous. Rick Sutcliffe.
You know, and I don't remember that necessarily as getting him fired, but he definitely was phased out.
Right. He just kind of disappeared. It kind of like Effingham. He just poof. You didn't see him on ESPN anymore.
Not as much. Yeah. No, that was, and that's the early days of kind of that high-speed internet where it was so much easier to have these things go viral, you know?
Sure.
Because it was just a local, right? That was just a local Padres broadcast.
Right, that wasn't a national telecast or anything like that.
Yeah, so, you know.
If that happened in 1987, then you probably wouldn't have heard about it for 3 or 4 months if you heard
even
about it 20, at all.
20, 30 years ago, none of this reaches anything outside of that regional market. Or if you hear about it, you hear about it third hand or as a blurb in the paper. But you don't actually get that, oh, wow, I can go on a web service now or someone's blog or on what, you know, what YouTube would have been at the time. I mean, it might have been YouTube. I don't remember. But it would have been more of in its infancy at the time. But you could go and you could grab that. And I remember you mined the hell out of it. You loved the hell out of that video. Because that was one of those great, terrible broadcast moments in the booth.
Like, you can smell the alcohol coming off the man.
Oh, yeah.
Doing
it. I mean, it's like I said, that's Joe Namath right there. That's Joe Namath and Susie Colbert right there.
It really is. But this is what happens when you over-imbibe and you someone gives you – it's a duel there. It's the guy over-imbibing. It's also some producer giving him a live mic. Like, what the hell are you doing,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, and not recognizing sooner. You know, don't let this thing breathe. For as long.
You're right. It is Namath-like, because Rick Sutcliffe in that moment was definitely
struggling.
Oh, big time. All right. On to our fourth inductee into the Baseball Hall of Infamy. A very, very infamous man who also liked to burn his bridges down and make a name for himself, certainly not in a positive way. Ladies and gentlemen, our fourth inductee into the 2023 Baseball Hall of Infamy, Jose Canseco. Jose Canseco was an outfielder mostly for the Oakland Athletics. He is infamous for using and abusing steroids for all he could and telling the world all about it later. Talk about a guy who doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, kind of like Sud, unfortunately. Jose Canseco hasn't met a bridge he wouldn't burn. He's one of the most famous baseball players and was one of the best of his time, but Canseco won't ever be immortalized in Cooperstown, not just because he juiced, but because he decided to come clean in his book and call out other juicers in the process. Canseco burst into the sport as the 1986 American League Rookie of the Year in Oakland with 33 homers and 15 stolen bases, then won the AL MVP in 1988 unanimously after going 40-40 in homers and stolen bases. He and Mark McGwire comprised the Bash Brothers, and their prodigious home runs propelled the A's to two AL pennants and a world title in 89. He was eventually traded to Texas as the A's wearied of his perpetual absences due to injuries. A long list of stops followed as a number of teams tried to recapture the MVP magic with little or no luck. In 2005, Canseco decided to release a scandalous autobiography entitled Juiced, claimed that as much as 85% of the sport was using steroids. He named McGwire, Rafael Palmeiro, and many others as users, and even said that he personally stuck the needles in some of their asses. The book was quoted by some of the lawmakers during the infamous Mitchell Report, which I already inducted. His new identity as an honest gatekeeper led him to write a second book titled Vindicated, and more players like Albert Bell and Alex Rodriguez were named in that one. Canseco is the epitome of infamous because he used his souped-up baseball skills to aggrandize himself into a Madonna-fucking, reality show-starring celebrity boxing uber-celeb, all while being able to claim a level of redemption and purity because he happened to be the first of the roided-up freaks to sing about it in order to sell a book. But there will always be a shadow over him because, as he has consistently proven, he'll say anything to keep people talking about him. Ladies and gentlemen, Jose Canseco.
Yeah, and that's sort of the that is the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat right there, all in one person, isn't it? I mean, you take just the performance, whether it was roided up or not. This was a time in baseball when that was not frowned upon. It was, you know, it was swept under the rug. It was pushed aside. It was celebrated. I mean, when we think about what ended up happening in '98 with the home run chase, and then. When that all started to turn against McGwire and Bonds and Sosa, here's Jose Canseco sort of turning himself into this anti-hero, I think is the best way that you could describe it, because he's the bad guy, but he's not wrong. And they, you know, as much as they tried to sort of impugn him because he was a bad guy and he was a cartoon character, he wasn't. We don't necessarily believe that he was lying about everything. He might have embellished some, but it was enough to have all the Congress hearings and the I'm not here to talk about the past and Sammy Sosa forgets how to speak English, and Rafael Palmeiro doing the Bill Clinton finger wag. We don't get any of that without Jose Canseco.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
That's right.
No, we don't.
Fans throwing syringes at Barry Bonds. I mean, we had and Jose Canseco, for good or for bad, because he benefited. He benefited from what was considered at a later date the cheating and the abuse of the steroids, and then by sort of turning heel and ratting out everybody else who did it, he turned himself into this, martyr anti-hero of that everybody could point at and go, well, see, he was the guy on the inside. But in the meantime, he's winning MVPs and winning World Series, Rookie of the Year, or all this, with all this other stuff that he had going for him and that he was in contention for. Yeah, he'll never sniff the actual MLB Hall of Fame, even though the body of work is there. But it's the sideshow and the, he crossed the players' line, as far as calling out the players and naming names. He'll never get in. But, hey, we will welcome him in with open arms into the Hall of Fame.
I have never used steroids, period.
I did not
have sexual relations with that woman. You could just see the wag as soon as as he does it. And all those guys, nobody believes them. They're all liars. Nobody believes Palmeiro. Nobody believes Bonds. Nobody believes McGuire or Sosa. And I don't think to this date any of those guys are in.
No.
I think you should just put them all in.
Right.
Because
they did it.
If the number's right, let's say he's wrong and he overestimated by a quarter and it was 65% of the league was doing it. Well, then that means you were going up with Clemens, all these guys, Pettit, you're going up against roided pitchers, all these people who got wrapped into that. If they were all cheating against each other, put them in.
Yep. They put up the numbers. They did it. They weren't playing against all these clean guys, like you said. Some of them were dirty, too, so what the hell?
You can't tell me the only Hall of Famer to come out of that era is Frank Thomas.
And Ken Griffey. Those are the only clean guys, yeah.
Yeah, and Fred McGriff.
your favorite, Chipper Jones.
Chipper Jones.
Those are the only clean people in the entire steroid era. Canseco also had – I like your the title of his book should have been – I'm not wrong. I like that tag that you put on there. That should have been the title. Should have been Jesus. Should have been I'm not wrong. You can hate me all you want. I'm not wrong.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, that's
we were doing
it's
all
not,
that stuff.
It's not how much you hate the person, or it's the message. And you can do all the ad hominem stuff and just attack the character or attack the person. But how about let's address what he actually said. Is he wrong? Well, they never did that. I don't believe he's ever been debunked.
Right. He's a scumbag, and he's a piece of shit, and he's a...
Correct. We'll accept all of that.
Fame-chasing turd, but he's not wrong.
Right.
He's
like ground zero of the steroid era.
Right. And he's got another similarity to Pete Rose, who we all mentioned earlier, in that both of them are... considered like they just have no intention of admitting what they were doing until they got the right motivation by having a book to sell, and then they just started singing about everything.
There's no dispute that these guys are scumbags.
They had no interest in the truth until someone gave them enough money.
But Pete Rose is a Hall of Famer.
He's a hit king. No one has more hits than Pete Rose.
Nobody has more hits than Pete Rose. He's Charlie Hustle, right, and all that stuff. He's a Hall of Famer. He had a Hall of Fame career. In everybody's mind, he's a Hall of Famer. Other than the baseball sports writers, the gatekeepers, who accidentally got somebody in with that 100% vote, and they screwed up when Mariano got in with the 100%. Somebody was supposed to be the guy to vote no, and they forgot.
Damn, who was supposed to do that? Somebody was supposed to vote no. We messed that up.
But But, you know, we've made fun part of this, excuse me, what we do is to make fun of that now, you know, thumbing their nose at people, kind of hoity-toity, the sports writers and everybody is going to be. It's a Hall of Fame, right? And you're keeping
that's
out.
That's it. That's all it is.
It's a Hall of Fame. It's not a Hall of Greats, not a Hall of Goats. It's a Hall of Fame. And through that era, all of these guys, McGuire, Sosa, Bonds, Clemens, Canseco, Pete Rose, they were the sport, right? Anybody who lived through 89 with the Bash Brothers or 98 with the Sosa-McGuire with the home run, everybody was wrapped up in that, right? Even when they're finding the creatine and the Andro in McGuire's locker, you're still wrapped up in that home run chase in that 98 wild card run, right? Everybody's wrapped up in that. That brought baseball back after the strike. They all deserve
Absolutely.
To be in. Put them all in. We'll gladly take all those guys. We'll put them in one by one, I'm sure. and Canseco was, you said it, 40-40 guy.
Monster. What a ball player. He came along and just, we hadn't seen anything like him when he came along. Like he
was. No, and that 80, what was that? Henderson, was that Ricky Henderson and Canseco and McGuire? I mean, that, come on. Was it Dave Stewart on that team?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the earthquake.
That's right, 89 when the San Francisco earthquake.
Yeah, all of that stuff. I mean, that's what we grew up with.
That team was going to win like four or five titles.
Of course. You know, that's one of the negative drawbacks of the steroids is you fall apart.
Right. Yeah, that was the thing. He just kept
getting hurt. You know, McGuire had the big thing in 98, but McGuire went through years of being injured.
Yes, absolutely.
So, right. And if we don't think in those terms because that was 9 years later that he was doing all of that stuff, and he looked like a completely different, you know, completely different guy. By this, it was like Bonds, right? When you look at Bonds, when he was with the Pirates versus what he was at the end, where
that's not the same guy. Bonds.
No, that's
Pittsburgh
like
Bonds
himself.
And Giants Bonds are not the same guy, right? He's double the size of himself.
Yeah.
Come on. Of course, Sam Sosa in the White Sox uniform wasn't the same guy as the Cub either.
Yeah. I hate to turn this into a diatribe on all of those guys needing to be in, but hey, what better place for it than right here?
Exactly. We got plenty of time. We got 17 minutes
left.
Yeah,
we're zipping along tonight, so I'm trying to
have one induction left
for you.
Right. For anyone who wasn't familiar with our stances on halls of fame and things of that nature, it's pretty simple. If you have a sport hall of fame and the leading hitter of all time in that sport isn't in, the leading home run hitter of all time in that sport isn't in, and the leading pitcher Cy Young winner of all time in that sport isn't in, you don't really have a Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. Sorry, Cooperstown. That's not really a Hall of Fame. Like
you have a Hall of guys we like.
A Hall of guys who haven't offended us. That's not real. That's not a Hall of Fame. Come on.
Yeah.
So... yeah, that's how we stand. That's how we see that. So, however you put up the numbers, you did it. You put up the numbers, you set the all-time records, and you should be in the Hall of Fame, period.
Right.
That's
and you can do what you need to do on the back end to make your peace with it, right? If you need to put something in the exhibit, you don't have to necessarily put it on the plaque, but if you want to put something in the little exhibit for that player that talks about those, hey, that's part of the fame.
It is, or
you know,
or you don't even have to do that. It, like they did it, they put the numbers up. It's up to the people that want to learn
right.
more if they want to go learn more. But you don't necessarily even have to do. I've seen that in places too. Well, put them in, but put an asterisk on the plaque or put something in the write-up.
Like I said, I don't even need it on the plaque. But you know what? Even if you put nothing in there, you're gonna get a dad who's walking his kids through there. And they're going to have the history. And then some kid, oh, who's this? Who's Barry Bonds? Leave it to that parent or that person who's that guy's a cheater, you know. Or that person might say, hey, he was one of the greatest I ever saw. And then he can tell the story of that. But don't just leave him out. Just don't blanket go, you know what, screw you guys. You're not in. You don't deserve it. Because people are going to be like, well, 73 home runs. Well, wait a minute. Yeah. This guy's not an all-time home run.
Right.
Yeah, it makes.
And I would even say that if it's six, seven generations later and someone's walking through the exhibit and they see the Barry Bonds exhibit and they don't really know all the steroid stuff and they don't really know the story and they can't pass on that part of it, then guess what? That means it really wasn't that important then.
Or if you're really that big of a fan of the game, you can go back and you can educate yourself. Oh, hey, I'm a big San Francisco Giants fan, and I'm, you know, and, oh, well, Barry Bonds, you look him up, you can Wikipedia or do whatever you want to do with that. Oh, wow, I didn't know all of this stuff, but you know, the numbers don't lie. You go back and watch all those videos of him just jacking home runs or was setting the record for the most intentional walks. I mean, they intentionally walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded.
Because they'd rather give up one than four.
And won them a game.
Yes.
It was, yes, this is, I know we've gotten off a little tangent here off of Jose Canseco, but man, he opened up the can of worms.
He did. He bashed the can of worms, and then when it turned on him, he started singing about the worms and told everybody.
Yeah.
Hey.
And then after the first go-around, he's like, oh, yeah, watch this. And he goes back for round two. And then without that, we don't get fake Dominican Cousins and all this other stuff. I mean,
so, yeah, the Jose Canseco was a very pivotal part of all that. The steroid world sort of orbited around him for a while there.
Right? Think of how much of our Hall of Infamy. Baseball, we have been doing many less years than football. How much of this Hall of Infamy that we've been doing for baseball is tied to that steroid era?
I'm not here to talk about the past.
Thank you, Mark.
He doesn't want to talk about all that. All right. It's time to go back in our personal history for our last inductee. I hope you've been drinking and got yourself nice and relaxed because this is going to raise your blood pressure. You probably know where I'm going with this.
Oh, man, there's so many ways you could go with this. Is this game two of the NLCS? Oh, my God.
It's actually game one. It's the very first game.
It was game one. Oh, that's right. They won game two. They won game two. It was game one that they, yeah, oh, man.
You're already starting. I haven't even done the induction yet. You're already
starting. I'm yelling
started.
At Dusty Baker from right field hoping he could hear me.
Oh, were we in right or left? We were in
right field, section 237. I can tell you exactly because that's where my season tickets were. And, man, yeah.
All right. Let me get the induction in, and then you can color in the rest
Dusty
of the 10 minutes.
Dusty Baker.
I know you're going to color
it. Nobody was more mad than me. Nobody was more mad than me when he got a title.
The 2003 National League Championship Series Game 1 is infamous for making Jay the angriest I've ever seen him.
Man, I hulked out.
You sure did.
The veins are popping out of my neck.
There was once an excruciatingly painful playoff series for Chicago Cubs fans before they ever witnessed a world championship in 2016. The way they managed to lose to the then Florida Marlins feels like something Jay should address when he's ready to immortalize that chain of events. But we were there, October 7th, live at Wrigley Field, for the manner in which they lost the first game of the NLCS, and it was unforgettable. It starts with the lineup decision by Marlins manager, Trader Jack McKeon, to bench power-hitting third baseman Mike Lowell for this 20-year-old kid you may have heard of named Miguel Cabrera. Curious, but the offense didn't suffer because the wild game was tied 6-6 in the ninth. The Fish got to Cubs closer Joe Borowski for a couple runs, but in the bottom ninth, Marlins closer Ugueth Urbina served up a two-run dong to Sammy Sosa that would still be traveling upward if the center field scoreboard didn't get
I was about to say, that home run that Sosa hit went next to the score. That thing, I saw some Glenn Allen Hill stuff. That might be the hardest hit ball I've ever seen.
That was an absolute destroyed ball.
That ball was still going
steroids.
Up when it left the stadium.
It was. I remember it very well. It's probably one of the three loudest stadiums I've ever been in at that moment when Sosa hit that homer. Where am I? They played a scoreless 10th. Then the big head scratcher happens. Cubs manager Dusty Baker sends out lefty reliever Mark Guthrie to face the 9-1-2 hitters. The 9 would be the pitcher spot in this ancient time when a DH wasn't in the National League. We all knew Lowell was still sitting there on the bench. We all knew Lowell crushed left-handed pitching. We all knew the Marlins would use Lowell to pinch hit for the pitcher. What do you think happened?
No, you didn't say it right. We all knew Lowell was going yard, because I knew, I think half that stadium knew, awful.
Home run. Yep. Jay was absolutely livid.
That didn't land in the basket.
No, it was not. Jay saw all this coming as soon as Guthrie came into the game and said so loudly, and when Lowell blasted what will become the game-winning jack, Jay's face was beet red, and the string of expletives was as long and prolific as the homer itself.
It was.
In the 40 years I've known in the 40 years I've known him, I've never seen him that mad. But he had a right to be. Basic baseball knowledge would dictate not to use a lefty in that spot, but Dusty gonna Dusty. So remember, folks, any discussion of the legendary collapse of the Cubs in 2003 needs to include the mismanagement of Dusty Retrusty, particularly in the very first game of the NLCS, or else it's not a complete discussion. The final inductee, the 2003 NLCS Game 1.
Game 1. You're absolutely – everybody wants to – see, I am not the guy, and this is well on the record, I'm not the guy who just bags on Bartman, right? You know, Bartman lost us. No, Bartman didn't lose us the series, right? You know, we mismanaged Game 1. We didn't trust our pitchers. I remember that Game 6, with the thing with Bartman. You go back, pull the tape, Mark Pryor is struggling in the 7th. But Dusty just ends up back out there in the 8th because he didn't trust his bullpen. But because he's also Dusty Baker and he wants to just destroy every starting pitcher that he possibly can.
Struggling.
Yeah, he sends him out there, and the team falls apart, and Bartman thing happens, and Moises Alou has a mental breakdown on that same play. Just that cool, man. You know, Alex Gonzalez drops a tailor-made double play ball. Like, there's so many things that went wrong in that game, that inning, and then that series. But you can trace it all back to a game one that they just, what are you doing? What are the worst? Man, Dusty. Dusty Baker. We saw him blow it with the Giants, right? I mean, there's no rally monkey for Anaheim without Dusty Baker mentally, you know, imploding as the Giants manager. And
ooh, shout out to Russ Ortiz. I might have to induct him someday.
Oh, yeah, or the rally monkey.
Mm-hmm.
But we all watched it, and we were all wrapped up in that because it was fun. It was cool. And then, the A's, they just kept coming back, man. Well, yeah, it's because Dusty Baker's a crap manager. And he got the Cubs there, and he kept getting them there. And then you just do, you know, you don't, you ruin the careers of your younger players. He ruined Corey Patterson, just completely ruined them. Blew his pitcher's arms out, ruined Pryor and Wood, throwing guys out there. I mean, there was one game that they had won where they were up by, like, so many runs, and he's still throwing those guys out there in, like, the 8th inning for no reason when they're up by a ton of runs. So I don't get it, overuse, bad managing, but yeah, it all sort of goes back. Everybody wants to remember Game 6 and remember Bartman, but man, yeah, Game 1, we were there. That also
we
was
were
part
there.
Of the, that was also part of it, is we were at an NLCS at Wrigley, right, first game, and
electric atmosphere.
Then the Cubs win the next 3.
Yeah.
So. And they can't close it. And then, you know, ironically, they win the World Series by coming back from 3. So, it's all cycles, right?
Yeah, at the time, you had no idea. At the time, of course.
No, I did not know, hey, here's our chance to go to the World Series for the first time, and at that point would have been 95 years.
Yes.
That, one, we were ever going to get back in that position again, or two, that it was going to take us 13 more years to get there to that position, to be in a World Series, or, you know, and at that time still, even though I lived up here, we still had our tickets, you know, and yeah, man, I'm glad we hung on to them, because at least I got to go to an NLCS. I went to Game 1 and Game 2, and Game 2 went much better. I got to go to a game one and a game two of an NLCS and see the Cubs at Wrigley in, you know, a championship series. And then to have them blow it the way they blew it, of course, it just ripped your heart out. Boston blew it the same. It was supposed to be Cubs Red Sox, right? That was
right,
what we were going towards. And they both blew it.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's great because, yeah, I don't know if I've ever been more, like, angry and just
never
let down
more
at a sporting event.
Never seen your face that color red.
Because everybody in that stadium knew what was going to happen except for Dusty Baker.
So I'm on the baseball reference page of that game, and I'm reading the fact that Guthrie pitched to, I think, one more guy, and then they brought in a right-hander, old Six Fingers Antonio Alfonseca. Why would you not just start the inning with Alfonseca? What was the point of bringing Guthrie in at all? And I'm sure we discussed that at the time, too, but... Yeah, we all knew, and you knew, and you were saying it as it was happening.
Right, because at that point, then the lineup turns over. That's great. Now you've got it's Pierre and Castillo at the top of the lineup, where the lefty makes maybe a little bit more sense. I mean, Pierre's a lefty. I think Castillo was a switch hitter.
Yeah.
But still, to not keep either keep the guy, and I don't know what the situation was if they had pinch hit for the pitcher in the 10th inning, so
no,
they had to make a change. That was just a straight switch.
About the Marlins?
No, the Cubs. Like if they had to make the pitching change, like if they had pinch hit for the pitcher, in the 10th. But still, either way. You know it's the pitcher spot due up. You know that the masher, as soon as you bring in a lefty, you don't have to pitch to three batters. It's not 2022.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Could have brought in a righty for one hitter and gone to the gone to the lefty.
You could have just brought in the righty and just kept the righty in, because at that point you don't know how long this game is going to go, you know, what you're set in for. If you need to bring it, I mean, they had got Carlos Zambrano, believe it or not, he was on that team.
That was part of the anger, was that,
there were so many things you could do that were not that.
Right, that was the anger, that we knew that there were so many other options other than let's bring in a lefty to pitch to the pitcher spot who we know is going to be Mike Lowell pinch hitting for. So this just makes so much sense.
Yeah. And you're not a Cubs fan, but you're a fan of the sport. You know bad managing when you see it, and that was it right there.
I was just sitting there with my mouth open, like, what in the hell?
And even less predictable, Lowell just destroyed it.
Yep, no doubt. No doubt. And that was the game winner, and that was it.
Yep.
That was the game
winner. And I remember them booing Dusty so hard.
Sure.
You know... I mean, you think about that fan base and the suffering and what they went through, and they're there. They're in the CS, and it's against the Marlins, right? We had no respect for the Marlins.
Right. They had won the one title before that in 98 or 97, something like that.
Well, yeah, but that was the – oh, God. Levon Hernandez won, you know, with the 8-foot-wide strike zone.
Another infamous scenario with Eric Gregg. God rest old Eric Gregg. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, that's a little chef's kiss.
Ah.
Getting me all hyped up now.
I knew that was gonna get you. That man, I've never in my life. And there's some other instances of you being done wrong and getting mad that I was part of and I got to see firsthand. But that wasn't that. You still weren't as mad as you were that night with the Dusty Baker decision. I've never seen you like that. So definitely had to induct that game. And I was so correct the history that
What's
I would
even
have.
What's crazier is I picked it. I was like, nope, it's that.
You knew. You knew what it was.
I knew.
Forgot the history of you weren't there for 6 and 7. You did not attend Bartman Live.
Correct. So I wasn't at the Bartman game or the game 7 where they got the huge lead and then blew that too.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for those. I was back home up in Wisconsin. We made the decision we were going to game, you know, We're going to game one and two. We actually sold the tickets for game six and seven and got a lot of money for them. And
sure.
Thank God we did.
The only thing worse than being there live for heartbreak like that is being there live and knowing you could have got a lot more money to not be there live for it.
Yes.
So we are into the after show now after that. So, yeah, we filled the time, as we always do.
Yeah, you know what? It looks like it's zipping along, but then you hit some subjects where we can kind of – you hit those last two where we were able to go off on some tangents and fill some time. And we always find a way.
There's always rich history with when you talk about the steroid era and when you talk about all that comes NLCS in 2003.
I just don't know if we've ever gone that long on – you know, the Hall of Fame worthiness of those steroids. I don't even know if we went that long into it when you were inducting the Mitchell thing and all that, because that was, I think Canseco's the perfect jumping off point to that, because, you know, he was the, you know, shall we say, I know it's cool to call everybody one now, but it was the whistleblower, right?
Sure.
But he was also not just the guy who witnessed it, he was the guy on the inside. He was even saying, hey, I'm the guy who was doing it. I was the guy who was bringing this stuff into the clubhouse. I was like the Pied Piper of the steroid era.
I was even the guy shoving the stuff in the guy's asses.
Exactly. And introducing people to people. You know, he was like, you know, steroid era Walter White.
But that's the thing, that he's the one just talking about all this stuff that's happening after he got rich and famous and big from doing
all
this stuff.
Of course. Oh, yeah, even better.
Which is why nobody likes him at all now. Like, the league doesn't like him, and all the former players don't like him either. Nobody likes him.
Oh, yeah. No, he profited on both sides.
Yeah. So he's seen as a special kind of scumbag. But, like you said, he wasn't wrong.
Right. I mean, that is the end of it. And like I said, they could do all the things to diminish his character and we'll give you all those things, but he's still right.
He'll admit he's a scumbag, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, when he's at his most honest, vulnerable moment, he'll tell you he's pretty
his
much
next book, his next book will be called I'm
anything.
Still Right.
I'm still a prostitute that'll do anything for money, and I'm still right. Yeah,
that's a solid class. You know, baseball we're still sort of young with, so we can get these varied classes. Like, if we're like with football, we're digging a little deeper. You know,
right?
But football gives us stuff all the time. Baseball not so, but baseball isn't just giving you automatic Hall of Infamy stuff every year. Like in a football season, we'll probably get five of them automatically during one season. You know.
And it's crazy because there's 17 games of that in 162 of baseball. So you would think there's a lot more opportunities
right.
for baseball, but they're just sort of so, I don't know, not by the numbers, but they're everything they do is so regimented, and there's not too many opportunities for someone to break out and do something unusual. So we are still mining the baseball because, like you said, there's still. We're still in the infancy of our Baseball Hall of Infamy induction, so there's still a lot more that we can cover. Whenever you do decide to get around to the end of that series, it's going to be explosive. So I'm just waiting for you to tackle that.
Of what?
Of that Cubs series.
Oh, of
2003.
Yeah, there's so much.
Right.
I mean, I like how you put the game in because. That is probably, you know, I might have to rethink because I don't know how many times. This might be the first time I think we've ever inducted. Well, I inducted the Fog Bowl. But that wasn't anything to do with the on-the-field stuff as much as you couldn't see the game.
The phenomenon of it all.
I mean,
yes.
Nothing better than watching the Fog Bowl on TV.
All right, we are back and we can't see anything.
I didn't have cable. So I might as well just put that thing on channel 4 and just watch the snow, you know, instead of trying to watch that on channel 2.
Is there any snow channels anymore? Well, you don't have cable anymore, so. But with these new
yes,
TVs?
Yes, I don't know. No, because now all I know that comes up is it just comes up with a black screen and it says no
right.
signal.
Right, right. That's,
you know, where
that's
we
what
grew up
gonna...
and you just got the snow.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna. That's what I was trying to ask. Do your kids even know what that snow channel looks like or sounds like? Because that shh, that sound.
No. Or the sign-off. The, you know, the 2 o'clock in the morning, you get the sign-off.
Yeah, we were just talking about that at work. Yeah, we were just talking about the days when you watch TV until TV goes off. TV used to go off.
I remember being up, and we're young at this point, so, I mean, I'm up probably way past the time I should have been up. But, you know, that little TV, a little black and white TV in my room, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, you wake up, you put something on, and you're just watching stuff, and, like, the weirdest things would be on it. These late hours, and then, this is the end of our broadcast day, and then you get the little test pattern, and the and then snow.
And sometimes they'd play the Star-Spangled Banner for some unknown reason, and that's it.
And then I can also remember being up early before, and then you get up for sign-on.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's sort of the other side. I woke up at, before 6 o'clock, or something happened, you put the TV on, there's nothing on TV. Now, a couple channels might have something on. But then there'd be those channels that didn't, because there was just nothing on. We did not have the 24-hour cycle like we have now. You know, or where ESPN would just show the same replay as SportsCenter all night?
Oh, yeah.
Over and over. Hey, tell me you never just sat there and watched them all.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sure. You had nothing else to do.
It happened.
Sure did. Back in the day. You know, I've been watching a series on History Channel about the history of food. And, like, all of those stories are fascinating to me because a lot of them go back when, you only had three channels in the 50s and stuff, before we were born. You only had so many networks that you could even, get on TV to advertise to. But what that meant was, when you did get one of those networks and advertise, now you're talking about 70 million eyeballs are on your product because there's not, 100 cable channels or 200 to choose from. There's only three networks.
Right.
So, you make that decision to advertise on this show and no one can ignore you. And it's just automatic. Now your name is in the zeitgeist, in the national conversation because you advertise on this show that all these people were watching. So that was like the way to do it. Like if you have no track as far as no one knows who you are, you have no name brand value at all, just get a commercial. Just get a commercial on one of those networks and boom, now everybody knows who you are. No one knew who the hell Burger King was until they started getting commercials on one of those networks. And then that's why they were able to compete with McDonald's. So it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so I'm looking at my MLB list for next year. I've already got 7 on it. I had 8. Now I've got 7. I look at my football list. This is even funnier because I've got 10, and I have all I have to do is pick out 5. Oh, you're doing this one. Yeah, I'm just doing 5 this year. So pretty sure I've got my 5 ready to go, but I'm thinking that'll be next week. Are you good next week?
I should be, because I don't know about this training thing, by the way. My instinct was correct that the Sports Info Solutions people did send me the rejection letter for the at-home scouting. They decided I wasn't the right fit for that, but they did finally get back to me a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and said, yes, I am going to be the on-site scout person for the Memphis Tigers football game.
It's just for the Tigers.
That's what they hired me for. And then there's a couple of universities within 100 miles of here that if they don't have anyone else to do those games, they may ask if I can make the time to do. And that will be Arkansas State and University of Mississippi. They're both 100 miles from Memphis. So I don't know if they have people for those two gigs yet. And if, all they can do is ask. If they ask and I can't make it, I can't make it. But the Tigers games, I'm definitely going to make the time to be available for all of those. There's only 6 games that I see on the schedule, 4 of them Saturday, 1 of them is on a Thursday, 1 of them is on a Friday. And I won't be out of town for any of those. I'm not going out of town until the week of Thanksgiving. So I shouldn't have any problems making those. As far as next week, I don't anticipate any problem doing a show at night, because the only thing they're talking about as far as training is Monday. There's going to be a Zoom, but that's at 11 in the morning. And I don't know anything after that, but I don't see how anything they tell me would interfere with me being available for a podcast next week. So,
okay. So for Memphis, are you traveling to their games?
No. I'm just talking about the six that are here at the Liberty Bowl. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. So I was just looking because I'm like, oh, they're on the road that week that we're going to be down there. So,
I won't be doing any games for that weekend.
When I told my kids that there was a chance that you would be doing that and we wouldn't be able to come, they were sad.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, cute. Wait, somebody's.
Uh-oh.
Who's down? Oh, that's my wife. Hello.
the cute factor mother. The mother cue factor.
Yes. Checking the laundry.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know if you have a...
Oh. My wife was in Michigan this last weekend. She said I should tell you that she saw an IGA.
Oh, boy. That's nice. I'm glad you saw an IGA.
Yeah, we have to be careful how we say that. Not the hard R. It was an IGA. Two words.
Got it. Understand. Understood.
Which is a reference to one of the funniest stories that I've ever told you about my mother. Little inside joke.
Very, very long running joke, yes.
That's a deep cut.
Very much.
I don't want to get canceled, so that's why I have to put a big space between Anne and that's almost as bad, and I know we talked about it in the past. I have to be very careful to put the space and the enunciation on here. Was the ESPN commercials for golfknickers.com?
Yes.
Because if you ever watch, go on YouTube and watch it. If you watch the Scottish accent version, doesn't come off that way.
What the hell did he just say? What?
I saw that commercial for the first time. I was like, what did you say? I was offended. And then they keep flashing the name of the thing up. And I'm like, no way. This is, this is ESPN. This wasn't Saturday Night Live. This was real. And the accent was so thick. It was...
Yeah.
Like we do a Hall of Fame for everything else like we've talked about doing. That's it. That's like first ballot.
first ballot bad decision making.
We just decided to just troll all the other sports and thought about like first ballot, you know.
Man.
There's so much. Yes. Like what would be on the first ballot of everything else, you know?
Like my first ballot would be Mike Tyson.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, just Mike Tyson. Yeah. Just not,
and then I would have in, you know, the who do you think you are? I am.
That's ballot, my guy. Right? Pete Weber. That's
Pete
Weber
at first ballot Hall of Fame.
Who do you think you are?
I am.
Oh, I love that. That's my guy.
Man, we got to find that. That deserves to be on the show.
It does. I don't know when we would play it, but it's a great spot. It's a great drop.
It is. It's one of the best. That's what I mean. It's one of the, that's first ballot.
The Mike Tyson thing, out of 600 things about Tyson that you could choose, the thing specifically that popped in my mind.
You do a whole show on Mike Tyson.
Seriously, that's a life right there, that guy. But the stage where he was trying to straddle the line between still being a savage beast in a ring and being like a religious saved person, which resulted in a post-match interview in which he strung together three sentences that no human in history has ever strung together in a row at the same time, and the chef's kiss coup de grace is doing it in his voice, which is so much higher pitched than it should be for someone that looks like him. But the post-match interview in which he was talking about his future, some future opponent, in which he said the following: "I want to rip his heart out. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah."
Yeah, he did that.
What?
Part is, I believe you nailed that verbatim. You've committed that to memory.
Which the only correct response to hearing that is to go,
"What the game 72-71.
What the hell did he just say? Yeah, I guess it stuck. I guess it stuck in my mind because, yeah, I'm pretty sure that is verbatim exactly the way. I didn't yep. do it in his voice, but that's the only thing that
"I want to eat his children" is the part everybody remembers.
"I want to rip his heart out. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah."
Man, that's messed up.
Stop. So that's my first ballad, yeah, for anything.
So, yeah, but it'd be fun to do someday. We had talked about it. With all the other stuff we do, you know, with just like the time commitment, you know, especially now with my kids, and summer's been it's been crazy. You know, there's a lot, they're getting older, so there's a lot more things going on in the summertime now. You know, there's baseball, there's soccer, there's my daughter broke her leg, there's school starting this month. We're on vacation twice this month. Well, nothing that's going to interfere with any of our shows, but that's what I mean. It's just constant this month, so.
Right.
I am good. I'm good next week to do my show, which is nice because you just kind of have to sit there like I did tonight and do the show. But I'm good to go. It's Thursday now, and I keep thinking it's Tuesday. This is messed up. We're doing a Thursday night show,
which we usually don't do, right?
During the summer, especially. So
right.
Yeah. So not knowing what you have going on, but I can do mine next week.
Yeah, I'm good any day next week. I'm just waiting for you to let me know exactly what's that. I think you had mentioned the 8th in my text.
Tuesday would be the day for me because that's my day off. So that gives me – there's no rush for me to prepare every – because I tend to just put it all together before the show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not getting home from work and then trying to rush and scramble. Wednesday works too. So whichever night between Tuesday or Wednesday works the best for you. I don't work on Tuesdays at all, and Wednesdays I get home early. Actually, no, not next Wednesday. I'm working all day. So Tuesday would be my day.
And next Wednesday wouldn't have worked for me anyway because that's when we start our bowling back. So.
Oh, yeah. Now, Wednesday where I would normally be home early, my coworker that I work with is on vacation. So I'm working all day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So Tuesday for me, yeah. Yeah, because if it's not Tuesday, then it knocks me out all the way till Sunday the 13th.
Right. No, it sounds like Tuesday has been selected for us by our schedules. So.
That's good because that actually gets me, now that I know it's like, okay, I'm doing this in 5 days, now I can start really digging deep and turning my notes into thoughts and my preparation.
The 5 seconds of the Hall of Fame game that I watched, you missed Zach Wilson sliding around and slipping out there, and you missed some referee shenanigans and double penalties.
Oh, well, I mean, ref ball never.
But never already? It's the Hall of Fame game.
Yes.
How are you guys
it's
calling
it? Preseason for the refs.
Oh, my God.
How many times was it a drinking game of that?
Oh, yeah, take a drink every time the – you hear the phrases, the refs are in spring training too, or the umps are in spring training.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That doesn't stop.
Just,
you know,
they're all
dying to be like, it's preseason for the refs too.
Yeah.
That's one of the, probably the best, I never really had this thought, and I don't know who said it, so I can, it's uncredited, but somebody was on Twitter or X or whatever the hell you want to call it. Yeah. And somebody had a post, and I'll paraphrase it, basically said that last year's NFL season was complete dog shit, basically. But it was funny as hell. And I'm like, that pretty much encapsulates the season, because it was a terrible season of football. Some of it was painful and hard to watch, but there was so much that we mined from a hilarity standpoint, a stupidity standpoint out of last season, that was like the perfect recap of that 2022 season. It was a terrible season of football, but funny as shit.
That's pretty accurate. It probably explains why I glommed onto the 49ers and loved on them so much. It was because it was so difficult to find some quality football in all of that.
You go back and pull the tape of us last season, and I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about the poor quality of play, the poor quality of officiating. We get gifted Nathaniel Hackett and Jeff Saturday, and we were gifted those things.
Jeff Saturday.
Wow. Jeff Saturday was probably the only thing that kept Nathaniel Hackett from being the worst regarded coach from last season.
I was about to say something very similar to that. I don't know exactly how I was going to put it, but I was going to bring up how much of a gift Jeff Saturday was to Nathaniel Hackett because his coaching job was so awful. Sean Payton probably should talk about the terrible coaching job that Jeff Saturday did as well. I mean, since he's on the roll.
I have a feeling if that he had been hired as the coach of the Colts, we'd be hearing all about it.
Probably.
And this whole drama thing with Payton and Hackett and Rodgers, first of all, Hackett and Rodgers need to shut the hell up because Sean Payton, he's got the Jose Canseco. He's not wrong. So I don't care if he's breaking some code or
he's
crossing some
line,
some unwritten rule that coaches don't call each other out. He's 100% correct. Nathaniel Hackett was a dog shit coach that left that team in ruins, that couldn't play call a game or manage a clock and put his team in terrible positions and had a top of the league defense that quit on him because that offense was so bad. And Sean Payton, good on you. He's not just, he's running cover for his team in case they suck this year. It was that bad. We all saw it.
But admittedly, you would say that about anyone who would say terrible things about Nathaniel Hackett because you were shitting on Nathaniel Hackett before he even got fired last year.
I was calling
you
for
were
him to
all
be fired
over that
before it was cool.
And I
even gave you the Fred McGriff point on that one.
Because my shitting on Nathaniel Hackett got results. It
got results.
Fired.
Man, I had him fired after week 5.
And I remember saying, come on, you're being too harsh. He just got there. It's his first job. Give him some time. He's going to – no, he really was that bad.
Yeah.
You were
I
all
had
over
him fired
that.
In London, but they managed to somehow eke that game out.
They won. You had that all set up. That they were going to leave him over there.
They're going to fly home without him.
Mr. Hagen, you're – ticket appears
we
to
forgot
canceled.
To tell you, Coach, you got a one-way ticket.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to find your own way back home.
But even still, even with all that, even though they let him be there longer than – they still fired him mid-season, which I know you were just, like, blown away. Like, that just doesn't happen.
It doesn't. To admit you fucked up that bad?
Yeah.
To fire
and it wasn't
coach before his first season's over?
Right, and he wasn't Urban Meyer or Bobby Petrino or any of that, you know, those types of – well, Bobby Petrino quit on his team. I got to put him on my list. but he wasn't doing like – he wasn't general douchebaggery, you know, where he's getting grinded on by college co-eds. No, he was just bad at coaching, and he didn't even make it the first year. That is rare.
One of our greatest generals in the Army was General Douchebaggery. He's a very, very lovely man.
That's one of my favorite words.
I did not imagine they were going to basically pull an Urban Meyer and tell the guy before his first season was over, will you leave?
Yeah.
We've seen enough. Will you get out of here?
So this Sean Payton drop, that's why I'm saying this is so manufactured by the media because Sean Payton is right.
Well, I don't think it's manufactured by the media so much as it is. It's shocking to hear someone say that because no one ever says that. So, of course, they're going to play up on it and talk about it and report on it because it's
so
shocking.
Especially because it's New York and it's Rodgers. I get it. And Rodgers then steps in it and starts going, don't you talk about my guy, I'm going to meet you out in the alley or something. I mean, whatever he said, which was really stupid. you know, and then hack it. Like, well, you broke some bro code or something between the coaches, and we all live in glass houses. Dude, you destroyed that franchise. You made them want Vic Fangio back. That's how bad you were.
I definitely remember Karen Rogers bowing up and trying to be tough guy and talking about Sean Payton needs to keep my coach's name out of his mouth, which,
yeah,
of course,
like he's Will Smith.
Reminded me of...
Keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth!
Okay, okay, Karen. Okay, big strong guy. What you going to do? You going to beat Sean Payton up? You going to slap him on stage,
yeah,
like you did, like you're at the Oscars or something? Come
yeah
on.
Like he's internet tough guy now.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to stand up for him. That almost sounded like some dude trying to protect his girlfriend. Like, dude, you know, need to calm down with that a little bit.
Oh, man.
At least it's something.
Yeah. Well, then you and I had that back and forth about the Jets, you know, not understanding all the Jets love. And I said something about that. Then some Jets fan responds to me like, no, you're wrong. I'm like, oh, well, now I'm convinced.
Well, that'll do it. That'll change your mind.
As I said, I haven't seen anything yet to convince me that the Jets are going to be anything better than the third place team in the AFC West. And the guy basically is just like, nah, you're dumb. I'm like, oh, well, now that you said that.
I cannot imagine getting into an argument with any sports fan on Twitter or X or anything else.
No.
It's just...
No, it was just you and I doing our usual thing, and then somebody just goes, oh, man, you're an idiot. Oh, great. Thanks. That's convincing. Listen, I haven't
Benching
heard a convincing argument. I still have yet to hear a convincing argument better than no you.
Oh, yeah? Well, your mama.
That's basically what I got. I love those. So
yeah.
Apparently what I said got somebody so riled up that they had to respond. I accomplished something, I guess.
Well, at least we got the king of non sequitur to get us off of any subject and get over.
George Clooney. You've been reading about all that? You've been seeing that?
George Clooney.
How did we get on this? What are we doing?
I'm glad you found that, because I did not have that one on my list.
Well, good. I'm glad I was able to entertain and bring up something that's very, very
hilarious. Yeah, that's good, because you get a little bit of Sutcliffe. Who's the other guy in the booth? Because I know Vescursion was in there.
Oh,
who's the third guy?
He kept calling him Mud. I think it's Mark Grant. You remember his reliever, Mark Grant? I think that was...
Barely.
Yeah.
But that's who that was?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Old Mudcat Grant.
What are you still doing here, Maddie? Everybody wants you.
That was a perfect ending to that. Like, you are starting to really talk out of school, and you need to leave now.
Yeah, because just when that interview starts to sound like, okay, it's kind of winding down a little bit, and such just going to kind of fade away, he just goes, Maddie, what are you doing here, man? And it's just kind of like, oh, where's this going? Man, everybody wants you, man. ESPN, the Cubs, the Dodgers. It's like, oh, we got to end the cut.
Yeah. Matt's trying to talk about some trivia content that was the name that was supposed to be the answer on the trivia, and Sut's like, no, we're not,
no.
We're not going down that road. Really, what are you still doing here? Yeah, that piece is I can't keep the whole 3 minute the original,
no.
But I definitely wanted to play it just for the context.
It's gold. It's gold.
Yeah.
It's now on the air. It is committed
yep
to the Hall of Infamy. It can play on an endless loop.
It's immortalized in this podcast, so it's not
It'll
going
be
anywhere.
Right there with Lee Elia and, Earl Weaver.
Earl Weaver, that's right.
Go fuck yourself.
Coach's Corner, whatever the hell that
right
was called.
Definitely couldn't do that today. In 2023. No way.
No. Even if that was done as a bit, you could not get away with that today.
Nope. Couldn't do it as a bit. if you do it as a bit, you can't release it. You can't do it publicly. I'm sure you
right
can do something
like talking
with
about
your
that
friends
lady needs to go and get herself laid.
Right. Right. No. Can't ever have that released to the public. Ever.
But it's classic.
Absolutely, it's tasteless and would definitely get
and
you fired today, but it's still very funny.
Yeah, and even the stupid shit that did get people fired, like our boy Tommy.
Oh, Tom.
So we
oh,
so yeah,
Tom.
even even though we haven't been at it for so long on baseball, we've got some quality. We've got quality in this MLB Hall of Infamy. I'm glad we do it.
Absolutely. And we're still kind of just getting started. There's so
much
more we can
do. Oh, the Browns won, if you care.
Oh, goody. I thought the Jets were leading by a lot. Okay, well, it's free season. Some people lost money on that, I'm sure, because I think the Jets were favored.
You know,
whatever.
I could not believe it. Because I listen, I have my rotation of podcasts, and all of a sudden today I get a alert that I have a football fantasy podcast to listen to. I'm like, oh, okay, what's this one? It was no joke, the DFS breakdown of this game. Like, I could go on DraftKings, and I could have put money on this game and taken a lineup of a preseason game, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I missed my football DFS, but that is a level of degeneracy that even no.
How does anyone know who's playing?
Yeah.
Like, the
Jets did not cover because they were favorites, and right. It was an over if you're interested tonight.
Okay.
I don't know how many times I've seen an over-under of 33.5. Tells you what they thought about these two teams. It went way over at 37. But I'm like, wait, first of all, I'm not wasting an hour listening to a breakdown of a preseason. You have no idea. I don't hear about,
not a clue.
Oh, yeah, I like that Kellen Mond tonight.
That is, if I get to that, have me committed.
Right. Well,
if
you of course are texting me about that White Sox collapse, the one that actually turned the Cubs from sellers into buyers. It's now gone down. That 7-2 White Sox collapse against the Cubs where they blew the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, you had money on it.
Why do you think they blew it? Because I had money on the White Sox.
The Cubs won again tonight. I don't know what the hell's gotten into them.
They can't stop hitting.
Well, they only scored 5 tonight.
Oh, well, they're falling all the way off now.
Way down. After that, 36 runs in 2 games was the most since 1890-whatever. Take that, Shohei.
Man, that's a long time ago. 1990-something? That's, wait, what?
No, 1990-something.
Oh, damn. Wow.
Yeah. 36 runs in 2 games. I saw it was the most runs scored over a 2-game stretch since 1897.
So you're saying they were kind of hot?
Yeah, I don't know who the Peg Leg Lou something. I don't know who was on that team. Those guys had the best nicknames. Come on,
One-Eyed Williams and
Three Finger Mordecai.
Spanky
that was a
McLaughlin.
Real guy, by the way.
Yes. Mordecai Three Finger Brown. That's right.
That's right.
Oh, man. All right. So unless you have anything else, I think we're done for the evening.
No, I am. I'm talked out. My throat is so sore for some reason today. I don't know if it's just my allergies or something, but I was at work today. I was just talking to people all day, and, man, I just had the scratchiest throat. So I'm glad I held up for the show.
You got to rest it up because you weren't even talking for most of this one. Next week is on you. So,
well, no, next
ready.
Week is just I throw stuff out there and I let you react.
Oh.
So, well, it was a good show. It was a great class. Let's recap this here. So we got what we get tonight.
We got Tom Emanski, the greatest baseball skills guru of all time.
That's right. Gets results.
That's right. We got old Steve Howe and his 7 or 8 second chances. In the Lee Elio wing of quotes, we get drunk Rick Sutcliffe.
George Clooney.
Maddie. We get the incredible Jose Canseco, who roided up and got himself as strong and big as he could. And then when it all went away, said, yeah, let me tell you about all these people that were roiding up with me.
Man, come on, that's like WWE. That's like the heel turn right there.
Oh, my God, he's a third man. How can he tell about all these people?
He just rips off the mask where it was obviously him the whole time, but then nobody knows. It was Jose Canseco the whole time.
It was me all along, Austin. And we got the infamous 2003 NLCS game one that we both witnessed live.
Yeah.
And well, I've never seen you angry.
Thank God that didn't happen. Now my heart was dead. Thank God I was just a ripe old 27 when that happened instead.
20 years ago, coming up on the 20-year anniversary of
that's wild to think about that. You know, it all is forgiven now, right?
Sure, because they got that ring.
I mean, Bartman came out of hiding. All forgiven.
All good. All flowers and rainbows and balloons.
That's right.
That's what winning does. It cures all ails.
It does. It really does. So, that's a solid class. Now, I will say, little light on the murder.
I only had one dead guy, right?
There was an unfortunate.
He didn't get murdered.
Yeah.
Killed himself, but.
Yeah.
I mean, it's baseball.
Wait till next
not...
week. Murder will be back in fashion.
That's what I'm saying. It's football. There's so many more killers in football. It's not, you know, baseball doesn't have a lot of killers.
True.
If you want murder and rape and pillaging, folks, you have to wait for the football.
Be back.
Hall
come back
injury.
Tuesday
there's
night. We'll have it
right
for you. Don't worry.
There's a lot more of that. All right. So that's what we're looking at is next Tuesday, the 8th of August, for the football NFL Hall of Infamy class of 2023 that will be done by Jay. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. It's always a good time when Jay is doing the inducting. He always comes with some stuff that I just never see coming. He's definitely unpredictable in that respect. So,
thank you.
I'll be looking forward to that. All right. Is that about it?
I am done.
Okay. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail of the podcast. This has been the MLB Hall of Infamy Class of 2023 induction. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. And come back next Tuesday. If you like that, you get even more. Tuesday night, August the 8th, football Hall of Infamy induction. And we will talk to you then.